ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो नाइन्थ चैप्टर द पैसिंग अवे ऑफ भीष्म देव टेक्स्ट 34। युधी तुरगा रजो बीधुम्रा विश्वाक कचा लूलिता श्रमवारी अलंकृताश्चे मम निशीता शरैर विभिद्यमाना त्वचि बिलसत् कवचे अस्तु कृष्ण आत्मा। युधि तुरागो रजो विधुम्र विश्वाक कचो लुलिता श्रमवार्य अलंकृतस्य ममो निशिता शरैर विभिद्यमानम् त्वचि बिलसत् कवचेस्तु कृष्णात्मा। युधि तुरगो रजो विधुम्र विश्वाक कचो लुलित श्रमवार्यलंकृतस्य ममो निशित शरैर विभिद्यमान त्वचि बिलसत् कवचेस्तु कृष्णयात्मा। युधि तुरग रजो विधुम्र विश्वाक कचो लुलित श्रमवार्यलंकृतस्य ममो निशित शरैर विभिद्यमान त्वचि बिलसत् कवचेस्तु कृष्णयात्मा। युधि तुरगो रजो विधुम्र विश्वाक कचो लुलित श्रमवारि अलंकृतस्य ममो निशित शरैर विभिद्यमान त्वचि बिलसत् कवचेस्तु कृष्णयात्मा। Yudhi on the battlefield, Turago, horses, Rajaha, dust, Bidhumra, turned an ashen color, Bishwak, waving, Kacha, hair, Lulita, scattered, Shamobari, perspiration, alankrita, decorated with, asse, unto the face, mama, my, nishita, sharp, sharai, by the arrows, bibhiddamana, pierced by, twachi, in the skin, bilasat, enjoying pleasure, kavache, protecting armor, astu, let there be, krishne, unto Sri Krishna, atma, mind. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. On the battlefield where Sri Krishna attended Arjuna out of friendship, the flowing hair of Lord Krishna turned ashen due to the dust raised by the hooves of the horses. And because of his labor, beads of sweat weighted his face. All these decorations intensified by the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows were enjoyed by him. Let my mind thus go unto Sri Krishna. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Okay, yeah. Please repeat after me. On the battlefield, where Sri Krishna attended Arjuna, out of friendship, the flowing hair of Lord Krishna turned ashen due to the dust raised by the hooves of the horses. And because of his labor, beads of sweat weighted his face. All these decorations intensified by the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows were enjoyed by him. Let my mind thus go unto Sri Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord is the absolute form of eternity, bliss and knowledge. As such, transcendental loving service to the Lord in one of the five principal relations, namely Shanta, Dasya, Sakhya, Vatsalya and Madhurya, that is neutrality, servitorship, fraternity, filial affection and conjugal love, is graciously accepted by the Lord when offered to the Lord in genuine love and affection. Sri Bhishma Dev is a great devotee of the Lord in the relation of servitorship. Thus, his throwing of sharp arrows at the transcendental body of the Lord is as good as the worship of another devotee who throws soft roses upon him. It appears that Bhishma Dev is repenting the actions he committed against the person of the Lord. But factually, the Lord's body was not at all pained due to his transcendental existence. His body is not matter. Both he himself and his body are complete spiritual identity. Spirit is never pierced, burnt, dried, moistened, etc. This is vividly explained in the Bhagavad Gita. So also it is stated in the Skanda Puran. It is said there that spirit is always uncontaminated and indestructible. It cannot be distressed, nor can it be dried up. When Lord Vishnu in his incarnation appears before us, he seems to be like one of the conditioned souls, materially engaged, just to bewilder the asuras or the non-believers, who are always alert to kill the Lord, even from the very beginning of his appearance. Kamsa wanted to kill Krishna and Ravana wanted to kill Ram because foolishly they were unaware of the fact that the Lord is never killed, for the spirit is never annihilated. Therefore, Bhishma Dev's piercing of the body of Lord Krishna is a sort of bewildering problem for the non-devotee atheist, but those who are devotees are liberated souls and are not bewildered. Bhishma Dev appreciated the all-merciful attitude of the Lord because he did not leave Arjuna alone. Although he was disturbed by the sharpened arrows of Bhishma Dev, nor was he reluctant to come before Bhishma's deathbed, even though he was ill-treated by him on the battlefield. Bhishma's repentance and the Lord's merciful attitude are both unique in this picture. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, a great acharya and devotee in the humor of conjugal love with the Lord, remarks very saliently in this regard. He says that the wounds created on the body of the Lord by the sharpened arrows of Bhishma Dev were as pleasing to the Lord as the biting of a fiancé who bites the body of the Lord directed by a strong sense of sex desire. Such biting by the opposite sex is never taken as a sign of enmity, even if there is a wound on the body. Therefore, the fighting as an exchange of transcendental pleasure between the Lord and his pure devotee, Sri Bhishma Dev, was not at all mundane. Besides that, since the Lord's body and the Lord are identical, there was no possibility of wounds in the absolute body. The apparent wounds caused by the sharpened arrows are misleading to the common man, but one who has a little absolute knowledge can understand the transcendental exchange in the chivalrous relationship. The Lord was perfectly happy with the wounds caused by the sharpened arrows of Bhishma Dev. The word bibhiddamana is significant because the Lord's skin is not different from the Lord. Because our skin is different from our soul, in our case the word bibhiddamana, or being bruised and cut, would have been quite suitable. Transcendental bliss is of different varieties, and the variety of activities in the mundane world is but a perverted reflection of the transcendental bliss. Because everything in the mundane world is qualitatively mundane, it is full of inebrieties, whereas in the absolute realm, because everything is of the same absolute nature, there are varieties of enjoyment without inebriety. The Lord enjoyed the wounds created by his great devotee Bhishma Dev, and because Bhishma Dev is a devotee in the chivalrous relation, he fixes up his mind on Krishna in that wounded condition. So Bhishma Dev is offering his prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is one of those beautiful prayers. Judhi turago rajo vidhum ra bishak kacho lulito shramobar jalang kritase mamo nishito sharoir bibhittamana Tvachi bilasat kavachestu krishnayatma. It's a very wonderful situation. Bhishma Dev is lying on a bed of arrows. The grandsire, who was one of the most exalted personalities, the son of an illustrious king, Shantanu and mother Ganga. Ganga Devi herself is Bhishma's mother. And Bhishma Dev was brought up in the heavenly planet. Right after his birth, Mother Ganga left Shantanu and took Bhishma to the heavenly planet. There Bhishma Dev studied under the guidance of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, one of the most exalted, most learned personalities, one of the wisest of all persons. And then he was taught the art of using weapons by Parashuram, an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Bhishma Dev had a very clear understanding from the very beginning of his life who Krishna was. He was a devotee from the very beginning of his life. He was brought up in the heavenly planet. In the heavenly planet, everyone knows Krishna, Narayan. They are worshippers. All the demigods are actually the worshippers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then when he was 16 years old, Mother Ganges returned Bhishma Dev to his father, Shantanu. And Bhishma Dev had such a brilliant character. He took a vow of lifelong celibacy. And that also was just for the sake of his father. He wanted to fulfill the desire of his father. And here we can see, like, when Jajati, King Jajati, was cursed by Shukracharya that he will become old, jaragrastha, he will become afflicted by old age. And Jajati was, became very perturbed because he knew that, or rather he considered that his heart is full of desire for sense gratification, whereas his body will not be able to provide him with the facilities to have sense gratification. So he requested all his children, please take my old age. That was the condition that Shukracharya laid, that if any of your son accepts your old age, then you can go back to your youth. And he asked all his sons. He first asked the eldest one. He refused. So in this way, one after another, all his sons refused. Jadu, Turbasu, and then finally Puru accepted his old age, youngest of all his sons. So here you see the difference. Although they are also very exalted personalities, from this Jadu, the Jadu dynasty appeared, in which dynasty Krishna appeared, Chandravamsa. So the father was requesting them, please take my youth, take my old age and give me your youth in exchange, because I have so many desires in my heart. I have so many desires for sense gratification. But they, most of his sons refused. Whereas Bhishma Dev, when he got to know that his father wanted to marry one very beautiful lady, Satyavati, the daughter of the king of fishermen. And so when he got to know that his father wanted it, but why his father refused? Because Satyavati's father made a condition that, look, if you want to marry my daughter, then you have to make a condition, that you have to take a vow that her son will become the successor to the throne. So Shantanu couldn't accept that. He said, well, I already have another son, and that son already has been coronated in the throne as a crown prince, so he'll be the successor to the throne. But because he had this desire to marry this girl, and that desire was unfulfilled, Shantanu was very much afflicted by distress. So Bhishma noticed that his father was looking unusual. He looked extremely morose and absent-minded. So Bhishma wondered what happened. But Shantanu would not tell him what actually happened. He said, no, everything is all right. So Bhishma then asked the chariot driver, what happened to my father? Because the chariot driver was there, so he knew what actually happened. So chariot driver described all that happened. So Bhishma said, okay, take me to that place. So Bhishma went, Devabrata, went to Dhibarraj, the king of the fishermen. And when he got to know that his father was refused because, or his father declined to accept the condition because of Bhishma. So Bhishma said, okay, I will relinquish my right over the throne. So here we see like, such a noble character, such a noble personality. For the sake of his father's pleasure, in order to please his father, or in order to fulfill his father's desire, he relinquished his right over the kingdom. He said, okay, I will not accept the kingdom. I won't become the king. Your son, your daughter's son, your grandson will become the king. But this personality was so cunning, the king of the fishermen, the father of Satyavati, actually, she was the foster father. He suggested that, okay, fine, you don't want to become the king. That's very nice of you. But what about your children? There will be a conflict in the family. Your children will want to have the share of the kingdom, because they will be older in age. And it is the custom in the Vedic culture that the eldest son in the family becomes inherits the properties. And for a king, the eldest son in the family becomes the king. That was also the problem with Dhritarashtra's children and Pandu's children. Dhritarashtra was the elder brother, elder than Pandu. And although Dhritarashtra couldn't become a king because he was blind, but he was harboring a desire that maybe his son will become the king, because his son would be older. But finally, when the children were born, son of Pandu was born out of Kunti, before Dhritarashtra's son. Gandhari was carrying the womb for a long, long time. The womb just wouldn't come out. The child wouldn't be born. So another chance was lost. But his son also couldn't become a king. So Yudhishthir Maharaj became the natural successor to the throne. And that is how all this trouble started. In the family. So Yudhishthir Maharaj was the original king, the natural successor to the throne, but Duryodhan made all kinds of dubious arrangements and he became the king. And that's fine. Finally, there was this battle of Kurukshetra. So, to go back to Bhishma Dev, Bhishma Dev was, he was naturally much elder, much older than, would naturally be much older than Satyavati's children. And Bhishma Dev would get married, if he got married, then his son would become much older than Satyavati's children. So he had, this Dhivaraj had this consideration at the back of his mind that his sons, although due to Bhishma Dev's noble gesture, he is foregoing his right over the kingdom. But what about his children? They'll start to fight over the succession. So then Bhishma Dev said, okay, in that case, I won't get married. So we can see what a noble personality. Just for the sake of his father's pleasure, he accepted, he took a vow of lifelong celibacy. And he maintained that vow. There had been many, many trials and tribulations. There had been many tests. And we can see, like Mahabharata actually describes that how the destiny prevails, how fate draws, or how the fate directs the course of one's life. As they say, man proposes, God disposes. We may have our own plans, but eventually everything is in Krishna's hands. In the material nature, we may make so many plans, but ultimately things will happen according to one's own karmic reactions. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasaha. In the material nature, everything happens according to the guna and karma. One may make, like here, the Dhivaraj secured the possibility so wonderfully. It was actually a foolproof arrangement for him. His son, his grandson will become the king, and he made arrangements that his grandson's children also will become the king, will continue to be the king unhindered. But the stroke of destiny took away both his sons. Satyavati gave birth to two sons, Chitrangada and Vichitra Virja, and both the sons died young. And there was no successor to the throne. And finally Satyavati requested Bhishma to procreate in the womb of the wives of Vichitra Virja. Vichitra Virja had two wives, Ambika and Ambalika, two princes of Kashi Raj, but Bhishma declined. He said, look, I took a vow of lifelong celibacy. I'm not going to break that vow. Satyavati was pleading, look, our whole family line will be destroyed. Now here we can see, her father wanted to make such an arrangement that her son and her grandsons will continue to be the successor to the throne. In order to secure that, Bhishma was forced to take a vow of lifelong celibacy. And now the whole family line is going to be finished. Bhishma, and she was pleading now, Bhishma, you do that. You procreate the children in the womb of these two girls. two of your sisters-in-law. And it's a Vedic culture, it's a Vedic custom that it is authorized by scripture, that when one takes to, when the family, when the brother dies without any children, then the brother-in-law, the brother-in-law of, that means the brother of the departed husband, can procreate in the womb of his wife. That is called Devarena Sutatpatti. Devar means brother-in-law. And Devarena by the brother-in-law. Suta means children. Utpatti means procreation. The procreation by the brother-in-law is allowed, authorized in the Vedic scripture, but that is forbidden in the age of Kali. In other ages it was allowed, but in the age of Kali that has been forbidden. Five things are forbidden in the age of Kali. Ashwamedh yajna, horse sacrifice, gavalabdham, cow sacrifice. Ashwamedham, gavalabdham, sannasa, accepting sannas, ekadanda sannas. Palopautrikam, offering meat in shraddha ceremony of a departed soul. Palopautrikam. And Devarena Sutatpatti, procreation through the Devar or brother-in-law. Kalau Pancha Vivarjayat. These five things have been forbidden in the age of Kali. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ki. But in other ages, that was, these activities were authorized. So Satavati requested Bhishma, but Bhishma declined. So finally, Vasudev was called by his mother. Satavati had another son through Parashar Muni, and that is Vasudev. So Vasudev was requested to procreate in the womb of the chair, these two wives of Vichitravirya. And through Vasudev, two sons were born, and they are Dhritarashtra and Pandu. So we can see what a wonderful character Bhishma Dev had. He had such incredible sense of morality, dharma, such staunch adherence to the principles. And it is because of that Bhishma Dev continued to side with Duryodhana. Although he saw that Duryodhana was such an offender to Krishna, although he knew that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but from another point of view, this was a disqualification of Bhishma Dev. Like here we can properly understand what is the meaning of Sarva Dharman Parityaj. Bhishma Dev was actually holding on to dharma. But that dharma was just the external consideration of dharma. The inner spirit of dharma, real dharma, is actually to surrender to Krishna, accept the authority of Krishna, be surrendered to Krishna. That is the real consideration of dharma. So here we can see that, of course, ultimately it's all Krishna's divine arrangement. Krishna through his devotees made Krishna through his devotees taught all his lessons. That's why Krishna made Indra behave in a certain way, That's why we can see, Brahma behaved in a certain way. But ultimately, it was all due to teach the right principle. The right standard of devotional service. Indra wanted to flood the whole of Vrindavan and destroy everything in Vrindavan, everybody. That was Indra's agenda. Brahma stole the cows and cowherd boys of Krishna. So similarly, we can see that Bhishma Dev also was made to play a certain role in order to teach us something. And what was that? And that is, what was the lesson that Krishna wanted to teach us? That no matter how exalted a personality you are, no matter how attached you are, how strictly you are following the principles of dharma, but the ultimate consideration is to side with me and surrender unto me. Sarva dharman padittajya mamekam sharanam. That is the ultimate consideration. Better would have been, like Bhishma should, if Bhishma left Duryodhana and his followers and went against the king and joined Krishna, that would have been the perfect understanding. That would have been an act of pure devotion. In pure devotion, no other consideration comes in between. Jnana karma anabritam. But Bhishma Dev was too attached to Jnana. At the beginning, Bhishma Dev was Jnana Mishra Bhakta. When Bhishma Dev was acting in that way, he was a Jnana Mishra Bhakta. But before his Mahaprayan, before his departure from this planet, he became free from the influence of Jnana. And he became a pure devotee. So we have to understand, as Rupa Goswami is pointing out, that Jnana Karmad Anabritam is the standard of pure devotion. Not Karma Mishra Bhakta or Jnana Mishra Bhakta, no matter how exalted they may appear to be. That is not the standard. But of course, our business is to see things in a favorable light. Our position is not to criticize Bhishma Dev. Although we understand, but as I said, that we have to see things in the light of Krishna, Krishna's divine arrangement. Like Bhishma Dev acted in this way because Krishna wanted him to act in that way. It was his pastimes. And Bhishma Dev was playing in Krishna's pastimes. Bhishma Dev was playing his role in Krishna's pastimes. And Bhishma Dev is lamenting that I shoot the arrows at you. Not that he'd shoot the arrows deliberately at him, but while he was shooting the arrows, many of the arrows actually pierced Krishna's body because Krishna was a charioteer. Actually, during the Battle of Kurukshetra, although Krishna was not fighting himself, but his whole body was pierced with arrows. There is a temple in South India, near Madras, called Parthasarathi Temple. The temple of Parthasarathi. And in that temple there is a deity of Krishna. It is said that Krishna actually, after the Battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna came there and he stayed there. And that deity, the entire body of the deity is marked with... the surface is not smooth, the surface is uneven, pierced Like that shows, like Krishna, when Krishna came there after battle of Kurukshetra, his whole body was pierced with arrows. So it's a tough job, even to be a charioteer, the battlefield. You have to take the flax, you have to take the arrows. You can't avoid it. And he is describing, you know, the next verse will describe how beautiful Krishna looked when he picked up he jumped out of the chariot, although he took a vow that he would not fight, he would not take up any weapon in this battle of Kurukshetra. But when Bhishma was fighting against Arjun in such a valiant way, and Arjun was in difficulty due to the onslaughts of Bhishma. So at that time, Krishna just couldn't bear that. What did he do? He just jumped out of the chariot. He picked up the wheel of a broken chariot and he charged towards Bhishma Dev. And at that time, it has been described very beautifully. Krishna's hair was flowing. Krishna looked just like a lion at that time. His hair was flowing and his hair took the color of the dust, the yellowish dust of the battlefield. And with the wheel in his hand, Krishna was charging to Bhishma. And fixing his mind at that sight, Bhishma actually left his body. And at that time, Bhishma Dev just dropped his weapon. Okay, my lord, kill me. So that is why, from that angle, Bhishma Dev is in Dasyava. Marubi rakhubi jo iccha tohara. I'm your servant. I'm your eternal servant. You are my eternal lord and master. Do whatever you want to do with me. So, it's a beautiful example that Bhishma Dev cited. All along, Bhishma Dev was always supporting Krishna, always was in favor of Krishna. If somebody criticized Krishna, Bhishma Dev stood up. When Shishupal was criticizing Krishna, and he said that this person is a debauchee. He had affairs with others' wives in Vrindavan. Do not have any sense of morality. And that person is being worshipped. At that time, Bhishma Dev stood up. And he said that the whole world knows me. I am known all over the world for my vow of celibacy. The whole world knows me as a celibate. And I worship Krishna, whom you are calling a debauchee. I worship him, being a renowned celibate. Why? Because Krishna is the crest jewel of all celibates. Krishna is the celibate. And Krishna is such a celibate that just by hearing Krishna's activities, everyone becomes celibate. That's what Prabhupada mentioned. That although apparently it may seem like Krishna has 16,000 wives, Krishna had affairs with all the gopis in Vrindavan, and they were it was apparently immoral activities because they were married to many of them were married to others, and But still Krishna is the celibate. And not only Krishna is the celibate, when one hears about Krishna, one becomes a celibate. So this way we understand that the spiritual world is in a different dimension altogether. And the spiritual relationships cannot be understood from the material point of view. It's not at all physical. There's nothing physical about the relationships in the spiritual sky. It's all spiritual. So, in this way, Bhishma Dev came to Krishna's defense against Shishupal's blasphemy. That this personality is worshipable even by me. If Krishna was a debauchee, then why should I, a celibate, worship him? Srila Prabhupada also made that point. If there was anything immoral in Krishna's dealings with the gopis in Vrindavan, then why Sukadev Goswami, who is a lifelong brahmachari, who right after his birth walked away? He is so detached. He was born and he walked away from home. So no attachment whatsoever to material nature. So why Sukadeva Goswami is narrating Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan? So in this way we must understand that there is nothing immoral, nothing immoral and indecent in Krishna's activities with the cowherd girls in Vrindavan. And in our day-to-day life also we see that so many women become attracted to Krishna. So many married women become attracted to Krishna. Do their husbands mind when they become attracted to Krishna? No. Because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and developing one's relationship with Krishna is the ultimate goal of life. So, only through the examples of exalted personalities like Bhishma Dev that we understand Krishna's real position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Bhishma Dev was waiting in the bed of arrows for so many days. And then finally when Krishna came, with Krishna fixing his eyes on Krishna's lotus face, Bhishma Dev left his body. And indeed, that was the perfection of his life. Hare Krishna, Jai Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Yes.
How I wish to say only from Krishna's viewpoint. Not to criticize Krishna, but actually to say from Krishna's viewpoint. So, at our stage, we have to learn to say everything from the spiritual master's viewpoint in our life, how things should be conducted. But sometimes it is very bewildering as to what is pleasing to the spiritual master and what is not pleasing. So, how do we ascertain in every situation what exactly is pleasing to the spiritual master?
Well, spiritual master will tell you. And if the spiritual master instructs, and of course in ISKCON we have to understand that the original spiritual master actually is Srila Prabhupada. In the context of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada is everyone's spiritual master. And every activity, all the services are actually based on Srila Prabhupada's plans. Prabhupada's arrangement. And the present spiritual masters are tuned in to Srila Prabhupada's mission. You see, they won't say anything separate from Srila Prabhupada. And they will not engage their disciples in any activity separate from Srila Prabhupada's agenda. They won't have their separate agenda. They are simply tuned in to Srila Prabhupada's agenda. And they engage them accordingly. So the first consideration is that the ultimate instruction or the ultimate engagement is in Srila Prabhupada's mission. And the details may differ, but the principle is there. And the details, like how one is going to be engaged, and that the spiritual master will tell. And not only the spiritual master, the initiating spiritual master, the temple authorities are also spiritual masters, shiksha gurus, senior devotees. And so it's not that a disciple or a devotee has to be all the time instructed by the initiating spiritual master in ISKCON. In other conditions that may have been the case, but that's not the case in ISKCON. Rather, the emphasis is more on the temple structure or the structure of the society of ISKCON. And the engagement will come from that line of authority. Generally in ISKCON, the spiritual masters do not interfere. It's left up to the temple president how the devotees will be engaged. But sometimes, you know, when the spiritual master is present, then he can engage. That's like, for example, my situation here. Like, yes, I do get involved in local affairs because here I'm not playing the role of a spiritual master. Here I'm playing the role of more of a leader of a project. But say, if I go to some other place, here I do get involved in decision making, how the devotees will be engaged. But in other places, I don't do that. Say, when you go to Bombay, I don't interfere into what will be their service. It's left up to the temple authorities, how they will be engaged. And I don't interfere. If the disciples come, I tell them, go to the temple president. Why are you coming to me? Only when the temple president wants my help, then I get into it. I give spiritual advice, spiritual guidance, but not practical involvement of the service. And like as you were saying, like if the spiritual master is present, in this context I will say, don't see that only the initiating spiritual master as a spiritual master. Try to recognize that there are many spiritual masters. Initiating spiritual master is maybe one of the most important spiritual masters in that context. But the temple presidents and other senior devotees, GBCs, they have to be seen as spiritual masters, shiksha gurus. Because we are seeing that if we stick to that concept that only initiating spiritual master is the spiritual master and no one else, then it will cause a great harm to the institution of ISKCON. It did, and if we continue with this understanding, then it will continue to cause a lot of damage to our movement. So we have to recognize that the senior devotees, temple authorities, they are also spiritual masters. And we should be concerned at how to please them. And if they are not pleased, they'll come down on you as a thunderbolt. Then you know whether they're pleased or not. Right? Okay. Answers your question?
I was not just asking the context of services, but behavior and attitude also. Like, how we deal with other sexual roles, how to deal with them, how to properly act in devotional service. Like that. I mean, like, as you said, unless the days are local parts, you can't be the spiritual master. But even within that, how to act in different circumstances. Sometimes,
maintain a humble attitude, be obedient, be enthusiastic, be willing to serve, and stop being a nonsense. Like, don't do anything that will be harmful to the propagation of Krishna consciousness. So that is the meaning of becoming serious. We become serious. Serious means no more nonsense. And no more nonsense means no more personal agenda. No more personal agenda means no more sense gratification. Right? And just serve. Serve. And when we serve like that, then what happens? When we serve, everyone around us becomes pleased with us. And when we see that everyone around us is pleased with us, then our heart automatically becomes filled with joy. And when everyone is pleased, Krishna in our heart becomes pleased. And as a result of that, the heart becomes full of joy. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is a very, very practical process. There's nothing artificial in it. It'll happen. You practice it properly, you'll get the result. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Gaur Premanande, Hari.
Thank you.